Chapter 3, The Master of My Fate. To the Godfather, to X-Men, to the Notebook, to much like porn, Richard Warlock was in his office, as per usual, and reading scripts, also as per usual. That is, if you could call what he was doing reading, which is debatable. Each day, Warlock Productions, the film production company for which Richard served as president and CEO, received upwards of 350 scripts and twice that many screen treatments. Although most film executives at Richard's level tended to rely on their staff members to cull through the daily deluge of prospective films, only deigning to read the best of the lot, Richard always insisted on personally handling each and every one. After 8 years of producing films, Richard had screenplay reading down to a science. Inevitably, when you have spent as much of your time reading scripts as Richard, you're bound to come across a few patterns. When questioned about his script selection technique during an exclusive interview with Forbes magazine, Richard explained, "In this day and age, there's very little original work out there. Most of the films that actually make it to the big screen are either out-and-out remakes of old movies, cinematic retellings of popular novels, or low-rent versions of previously successful movies. When I'm reading a screenplay, I can usually tell which category it falls into after reading just a few lines of dialogue. The whole process can take as little as 2 minutes." Having not found a single worthwhile concept in the 50 scripts he had just reviewed, Richard sighed and leaned back in his black leather office chair. It was at times like these when he wondered whether he was losing enthusiasm for the work that had been the sole driving force in his life for as long as he could remember. As Richard was known to do when he was feeling disheartened, he swiveled his chair around to face the large movie poster framed directly behind his mahogany desk. The poster featured an elderly man lying in a drab, stark white hospital room. The man stared intently out of the poster at its viewer, his expression a mesmerizing mixture of sage wisdom and deep-seated regret. Below, and to the left of the title, in much smaller print, was the film's tagline, "I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul." The promotional poster was from the first film ever produced by Warlock Productions, a company which Richard started himself from scratch. Invictus, based on a poem of the same name written by William Ernest Henley, a longtime favorite of Richard's, told the story of a terminally ill father who monumentally improved the lives of his four grown children, all from the confines of his hospital bed. Following the success of Invictus, Warlock Productions immediately went from being a small, fledgling enterprise to the most sought-after film production company on the West Coast. Richard was shaken out of his Invictus-fueled reverie by a buzz on his intercom, perpetuated by none other than his trusted assistant, Sophie Blake. Sophie began as an intern for Warlock Productions, a position she maintained while completing her senior year at UCLA. Richard was so impressed with her intelligence and ambition that he decided to hire her as his personal assistant immediately upon her graduation from college. That was 3 years ago. "Yes, Sophie?" Richard intoned into the intercom.
"I have Trent Mesnick on the phone for you."
Trent was the young director Richard had hired for his most recent film project. The script for Like a Virgin, a biopic of pop icon Madonna, had been the most sought-after screenplay in Hollywood for months. When the screenplay was first making its rounds, Madonna's then-husband director, producer, Guy Ritchie, seemed an obvious choice for its production. But upon the finalization of his divorce from the Divine Diva, all bets were off. The next thing Richard Warlock knew, the heretofore elusive script was on his doorstep, just waiting to be made into yet another Oscar winner. "Regarding," continued Richard in a bored monotone, after 3 years, he and Sophie had their telephone routine down flat. "The shooting schedule for Like a Virgin." "Mood?" Richard inquired, as was customary for him in conversations like these. "Apprehensive," replied Sophie. "Put him through," replied Richard. There was a momentary pause as Sophie connected Richard to Trent. Richard kept his phone on speaker, absent-mindedly strolling about the confines of his office as he spoke. "Trent, what can I do for you?" Richard asked, in a voice that was boisterously friendly and yet strangely bordering on threatening. When it came to deal-making and negotiating, Richard was the best in the business. Nevertheless, his small-talk skills left a bit to be desired.
"Mr. Warlock, I..."
"Who is this old fart Mr. Warlock you speak of?" Richard interrupted.
"I'm sorry, Mr. War... I mean, Richard. First, I just wanted to thank you again for believing in me, my vision for Like a Virgin. I'm really honored to have been chosen for this job."
Richard rolled his eyes and groaned inwardly at his protege's feeble attempts at ass-kissing. Although some of the most established directors in Hollywood expressed an interest in this film, Richard, as he was wont to do, made the controversial move of selecting for the position a 26-year-old Hollywood greenhorn, coincidentally the same age Richard was when he first started Warlock Productions, whose only directing credits included a few solid episodes of a teen drama that, while critically acclaimed, lasted for only 2 seasons on Fox before being abruptly canceled. Despite the young man's tendency to nervously stammer when he spoke, a la Woody Allen, Richard took an instant liking to Trent, recognizing in him some of the single-mindedness Richard himself had shown at that age, when he was still a young upstart trying desperately to break into the movie-making business.
"Say the fear acceptance speech, Trent. I offered you this movie because you were the best man for the job. End of story."
"Yes, sir. Actually, I was calling about the shooting schedule."
Richard smirked. He knew exactly where this was going. Quickly, he wiped the telltale grin from his countenance, deciding to have a little fun with Trent.
"Ah, yes. I know the timing is a bit ambitious, but it is imperative that the film hits theaters in time for Oscar consideration. And I know that if anyone can do it, it is my man, Trent Mesnick."
While he was speaking, Richard picked up a colored slinky from his desk and began to move it back and forth in his hands, like a cat toying with a skittish mouse before the big kill.
"Okay. But my concern is not with the timing of the schedule."
Richard, of course, had expected as much, but continued to act coy.
"What is the problem, then?" he asked.
Trent inhaled deeply into the foam. Richard could almost feel the director's pulse quicken as he struggled to choose the appropriate words.
"Well, it's just that there may have been a mistake regarding the location listings,"
Trent blurted out, cringing as he said the word mistake.
I don't make mistakes, responded Richard sternly.
Of course not, sighed Trent, mentally kicking himself for not finding a kinder noun.
Perhaps your assistant Sophie doesn't make mistakes either. She would not have lasted here for so long if she did, interrupted Richard.
Trent tried again. When I was looking at the schedule, I noticed that we're slotted to shoot the wedding party at the Wildlife Road home on April 26th.
And, said Richard, starting to get bored with this game.
And, replied a frustrated Trent, at our meeting with the location manager last week, he mentioned that the home was being demolished on April 17th.
I don't see a problem here, Richard replied absentmindedly. He had resumed reading his scripts.
The problem is that we'll be shooting a multi-million-dollar wedding party on a pile of dirt and ash, said Trent incredulously, all vestiges of composure lost from his voice.
That's not going to happen, Trent. I know you wouldn't let that happen.
I have faith in you.
Listen, I've got a pile of paperwork to do. It was really great speaking with you, Trent, answered Richard, before hitting the speaker button and disconnecting his connection with the panicky director.
Richard put his hands behind his head, utterly relaxed. He knew that ultimately he would somehow be able to film at that house in Malibu on the day he desired. Just as, when he was younger, he knew that every time he had neglected to study for an exam, it would miraculously be postponed. And every time he overslept, school would be delayed. In all matters professional and financial, windfalls always had their way of finding Richard Warlock. Some called it luck, but he simply called it good business. If only his personal life could be as uncomplicated. Noticing the time on his digital wall clock, Richard grabbed the universal remote control on his desk and pointed it toward the 42-inch plasma flat-screen television positioned on the wall directly in front of him. It was time for the multi-millions lottery drawing. Richard watched as a familiar face appeared on his television.
This is Miranda Ortega, here for your weekly multi-millions drawing. Today's lottery winner stands to win $207 million. The first ball up is...
22, guessed Richard, just seconds before the white ball bearing the first lottery number appeared on his television screen.
22,
Miranda exclaimed with almost irritating jollity.
16,
Richard fired back at the television as the second numbered ball emerged.
16,
said Miranda.
3,
sang Richard confidently, turning his back on the television screen.
3,
Miranda responded.
18,
Richard proposed.
18,
answered Miranda.
12,
remarked Richard.
12,
remarked Miranda.
And the multi-ball number is?
4, Richard inquired.
5,
finished Miranda, triumphantly pointing to a green ball with gold lettering.
Darn multi-ball,
muttered Richard as he turned off the television. He was so involved in his lottery predictions that he had neglected to notice the attractive young female leaning against the door of his office, watching him with amusement.
5 out of 6, not bad, remarked Sophie, playfully.
The multi-ball gets me every time,
said Richard, with the slightest twinge of a pout apparent on his face.
You still could have won $250,000 if you actually bought a ticket.
Why don't you anyway? It's not like you can't afford it.
I don't buy lottery tickets. If I bought them, I know I would win, Richard answered, decisively.
So,
began Sophie, with furrowed brow.
What would be the fun in that?
Sophie thought about this for a moment. Well, I guess the last thing someone like you needs is more money. You know what? I've got a better idea. How about you buy a ticket and give your winnings to me?
I couldn't do that. I value your services too much,
deadpan Richard.
Lucky me, replied Sophie sarcastically. What do you have for me? Richard asked, noting the manila envelope Sophie was clutching under her arm.
Sophie approached the desk, her shoulder-length black hair bobbing rhythmically as she moved. Headshots from casting on Like a Virgin. They want you to pick your top five for young Sean Penn before they start the audition process. Richard reached for the envelope, which Sophie was still holding, then looked critically into her eyes, which were almond in both shape and color.
Have you looked at these?
Yes,
responded Sophie cautiously. What are your thoughts?
Sophie glanced up at her boss, taken back by his sudden interest in her professional opinion. After 3 years of working with Richard Warlock, he still sometimes managed to catch her off guard. Well, Sean Penn was 25 when he married Madonna, Sophie offered gently, releasing the envelope from Richard's grasp. So, what we have here are, more or less, the usual suspects. A-listers from the 20 to 30 age group. Jake Gyllenhaal, Emile Hirsch, Benjamin McKenzie, Robert Pattinson, James Franco, Ed Westwick. Richard looked at Sophie with new eyes, impressed by her confidence and apparent knowledge of the industry. But there was one interesting addition, cautioned Sophie, as she slid a glossy headshot across the desk to Richard. Richard stared at the photo blankly for a moment. Then, his body noticeably tensed. Richard was looking right into the photogenic eyes of his younger brother, Justin Warlock, whom he had not seen or spoken to in years. Sophie quickly assessed her boss's reaction and then continued. He's precisely the right age for the part and can certainly pass for a young Sean Penn. Granted, his dramatic acting experience is not quite on par with the rest of the bunch, but I think he can pull it off. And here's the strange thing. The return address on the resume and headshot came from Justin's home, not an agency. He may have gone over his agent's head on this one. Richard stared at Sophie with a mixture of annoyance, discomfort, and admiration. He was about to respond when the phone rang. Richard looked relieved. Sophie waited for a nod from Richard before picking up the phone on his desk. Richard Warlock's office, she said in her customarily cheerful, sing-song telephone voice. Trent Mesnick, back from more torture already? She asked, winking at Richard. Okay, hold on a minute, please. Let me see if he's around. Richard smiled and took the phone from Sophie's hand, brushing his long fingers briefly against her smooth, delicate ones.
Trent, twice in one day, what an honor. What's up? What? The demolition has been pushed all the way back to July, huh? How about that? It looks like we will have a house to shoot at on the 26th after all. Well, thanks for letting me know. Enjoy your weekend, Trent.
Richard hung up the phone, looking smug. Sophie shook her head disapprovingly. You tortured that poor man for no reason. You knew you were going to have the house all along, didn't you?
And you are completely transparent, challenged Richard, abruptly changing the subject to the one that had been on both of their minds before Trent's phone call interrupted them. Trying to push my baby brother on me like that. You know, not everybody grew up in a Leave It to Beaver household like you did. My family life is complicated, and last I checked, being my life coach was not part of your job description.
I did not grow up in a Leave It to Beaver household, muttered Sophie, feeling defeated and slightly hurt.
Do you not deny that it was your intention for me to see this picture of my brother, fall all over myself with regret, and immediately rush to his home with flowers and a multi-million-dollar movie contract?
Go home and walk your dog, Sophie retorted, with all of the maturity and poise of a recalcitrant 5-year-old.
Richard chuckled. I assume you're talking about Invictus. Otherwise, I am not above filing a claim of sexual harassment against my assistant.
Well, seeing as I'm so transparent, I'm sure you will have no trouble figuring it out, replied Sophie, before turning on her heel and exiting the office.
Richard stared at the space recently vacated by his assistant with shock and amusement as he clutched his estranged brother's photograph.
Prone to frequent bouts of insomnia, Richard had only just drifted into a light sleep moments before when the phone rang on his bedside table. The eerie blue light from his alarm clock informed him that the time was 3:04 a.m. Richard sprung immediately awake, his heart in his throat, as he picked up the phone.
What happened?
Richard.
Adam?
It had been 13 years since Richard had spoken to his brother Adam. To any of his brothers, for that matter. Richard suddenly came to the sad realization that today was the 13th anniversary of his mother's death.
I hate to call you so late, especially after all this time.
Adam began awkwardly, struggling to find the right words to say to his estranged older brother. He sighed audibly before speaking again.
I'm at St. Luke's Hospital. It's Dad.
Richard tightened the grip on his cordless phone and sat up straighter in bed.
Just tell me, Adam. I can handle it, he replied sternly. He didn't make it. I'm so sorry, Richard.
Richard closed his eyes. On some level, he knew his father was gone the minute the phone rang, but foreseeing the sucker punch didn't make the blow any softer. As the idea registered in Richard's brain, he felt a surge of conflicting emotions. Sadness, shock, anger, fear, loneliness, and perhaps most overwhelmingly, guilt. After all, his brothers weren't the only ones with whom Richard cut off all communications on that fateful day 13 years ago.
How did it happen? Richard whispered, his voice suddenly sounding foreign to him, hazy, disembodied, and dreamlike.
Richard Warlock was drowning. He had a strong desire to escape, but nowhere to go. He was now an orphan in every sense of the word.
They said it was a heart attack, Adam recounted, rushing through his words so as to minimize their painful significance for both his brother and himself.
They called me from the ambulance. Apparently, Dad made the 911 call from his home at about 1:30 a.m. When they picked him up, he was still conscious. He kept telling the ambulance workers that he wanted to speak to his sons. He fell into a coma before they can get any of us on the phone.
He died alone. I let him down, pronounced Richard morosely. Hey, please, don't beat yourself up over this now.
It was a long time ago. You had your reasons for doing what you did.
Dad understood that.
He loved you.
He loved all of us.
Adam spoke in an even tone, but his voice was hoarse. Richard wondered whether his brother had been crying.
Do they know yet?
Richard, of course, was referring to his other two brothers.
I called them. They're coming down to the old house first thing in the morning.
Well, at dawn, I guess. The funeral will probably be on Sunday.
Okay. I'm going to get myself together and head down there, too. I have a lot to do. Straighten out Dad's finances, cancel his credit cards, contact a lawyer.
In times of strife, Richard found solace and distraction in the day-to-day tasks of life. He hoped that winding up his father's affairs would help keep him sane and assuage his guilt.
"Richard, let me take care of this one, please," pleaded Adam. "He thinks it's my fault. He thinks that my handling of Mom's estate was what tore us apart all those years ago." So much for assuaging his guilt. Richard was deeply hurt by his brother's implication, but felt too overwhelmed to argue with him now.
"Okay. I'll be there first thing in the morning."
"Okay," said Adam, before hanging up the phone.
Richard stared at the phone for a minute in silence. The darkness of his bedroom, enveloping him like a tomb. His golden retriever, Invictus, remained asleep on the end of his bed, unshaken by recent events. Richard suddenly realized he had no one there to console him. For a brief moment, he missed his ex-wife. He even wondered what Sophie was doing at this moment.
"Probably asleep in her bed," he thought.
It's always strange, the things one thinks about in times like these.
"Fuck," Richard said softly.
"Fuck," he said more loudly this time, flinging his phone against the wall. In a rage, he knocked his alarm clock off the nightstand. The two dislodged objects hit the floor with a loud thud. Invictus awoke with a start and dashed out of the bedroom, leaving Richard totally and completely alone with the one person he couldn't bear to be around right now, himself. Richard walked across the room in a fury, looking for more objects to throw. Then, just as suddenly as it came upon him, his anger melted away. All of the strength drained from his body. He leaned against the wall and allowed himself to slide to the floor. And then, Richard Warlock did something else he hadn't done since his mother passed away 13 years ago. He cried.